Welcome to the Jeremy Till Podcast. Over the last 20 years, I've been in pursuit of finding a higher order, mind, body, and spirit. Being a gym owner for over the last 15 years, I've worked with hundreds of thousands of people, helping them with their mind, body, and spirit through nutrition and fitness. But mindset and the pursuit of that higher order has also brought me to a lot of people of influence that are in the same pursuit. What I'll be doing on this podcast is interviewing them, bringing their truth and testing them in your own home, in your own life, to figure out how these can also benefit you. We're on this journey together. Let's do it. All right, guys, it's Jeremy Till with the Jeremy Till Podcast. I got Derek Toshner here, all the way from the great state of Wisconsin. I go way back with Derek, almost a decade, but we have a very similar past. In the functional fitness space and just very like-minded. I've been able to bond with him over the last few years growth-minded, kettlebell-minded, all those aspects. But this man is an athlete out probably outside of my realm, a lot of feats and successes in his back pocket. So, Derek, what's happening, my friend?
Hey, Jeremy. Good to see you. Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely, man. So, kind of get started out. I know your background in track and field is kind of where you started in your pursuit of athletic endeavor. So tell us about your background, like with track and field and your success there.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I might actually back you up a little bit even before that, it was wrestling. I grew up in a town, a real small kind of farming community. And wrestling was our sport. Like, we were tough kids, and we had a great coach. And he won, I believe it was 34 years of conference championships in a row, which he's obviously he's in the United States Wrestling Hall of Fame, and it's a big deal. So, wrestling was our thing in Campbellsport, Wisconsin. And something crazy like 230 conference dual meet wins in a row, just ridiculous, right? Years and years of success. So I grew up in this environment of like hard work ethic, and wrestling's a brutal sport. I think when I started running track, I always told people I became a wimp when I started running track, because wrestling was so tough mentally and physically demanding. And I mean, you give it everything you got and you lose, and you have to get back up and you're at a tournament and go back out there an hour later and do it again, right? And you have to learn how to pull it together. So I started wrestling in second grade. And I also had an older brother that was in wrestling. He was 3 years older than me. So, would always receive a beat down from him and his friends, and would always wrestle older kids. And so, kind of grew up in this championship environment. Like, I knew what it took to win from an early age, and the hard work and discipline and dedication. I saw amazing wrestlers, probably the best wrestler that came through our school, had one loss his entire high school career. And so he won 3 state championships. And so I got to see what that work ethic was like. And amazingly, unfortunately, I always thought I'd wrestle in college, but I got really good at track. And not that I wasn't good at wrestling, but
before you go into that, Derek, I just recalled your story about you being picked on or being overweight, because that's another bond that we had, kind of what started us. And I think you had a gym in your basement, am I tagging onto that story right? You might have froze there for a second. You there, Derek?
Yeah, so I was a little bit chubby probably until about the third grade. I was pretty thin and wiry after about third grade. But, I think, just growing up ginger, right? Like redheaded and freckle-faced kid, and you know, sayings like redheaded stepchild. I mean, stuff like that doesn't just come up, right? So that was just kind of things that I had to get over, getting picked on, you know, as a kid. And of course, you know, being Irish, I had a temper as well. So getting picked on didn't go over too well. But yeah, just stuff shoved into lockers, books dropped, you know, name called, that kind of stuff. And, you know, when I was real little, we didn't have a lot of money as a family. And so, you know, we shopped at St. Vinny's and stuff like that. So I was definitely not one of the cool kids. And so, I also lived in the country, like I said. And so I wasn't in the city and wasn't able to really connect with a lot of friends like after school. So what I would do after school, I got in sports. Sports was like my outlet to kind of take out that redheaded anger, and especially wrestling. So yeah, I got to train after school, and then I'd go home, I would have dinner, and then I'd go down into the basement where my dad had set up a weight room down there for us, and I would take it out on the weights, you know, any kind of anger that I had for the day, you know, or frustrations or feelings of like, I'm not worthy or I'm not good enough. Right. You know, I felt like I had something to prove. And so I'd go down there and take it out on the weights. And so it was pretty cool. My dad, you know, my dad was a drill sergeant in the military. So, kind of a tough dude and liked a lot of very hard exercises like power wheel rollouts and like the wrist roll where you hold it out and roll it up and roll it down. We had those in the living room growing up when I was a kid. So yeah, I would go down into the weight room and do some pretty grueling exercises. And that's really where my love of fitness and passion for fitness started.
So in your wrestling, you might've mentioned this, but what was your, how far did you go in wrestling in the championship level? Is that something you got to compete on or?
Yeah. Like I said, I always thought I'd wrestle in college. I did take second in state with a torn ACL. I tore my ACL on the Tuesday of state, and then state was Friday and Saturday. So, yeah, it's kind of a crazy story. I shot in on my brother who was wrestling in college at the time, and he knew I was qualified for state, so he wanted to come back and train with me. And I did a shot in on him, and I hyperextended my leg, and it popped my ACL off. And, man, my knee was swollen. I could barely bend it. And we get into the doctor, and they're like, yeah, torn ACL. We do surgeries on Thursday. We can get you in right away this Thursday. And I'm like, no, you know, I'm going to go wrestle. And they're like, yeah, no, we don't recommend that. We'll do surgery on Thursday. I said, no, you don't understand. Like I'm going to go wrestle. This is something I've wanted since I was in second grade, you know, and it was the first year that I had ever qualified for the state championships. And he's like, man, I really don't recommend that. And I said, well, what am I going to do? Hurt it worse? And he's like, well, you could. And I said, well, if I do that, when you're doing surgery, you can fix whatever else I break. And he's like, oh, okay. And so, yeah, I went to state, and, you know, as my left leg, I always kept that leg protected when I was wrestling. I kind of had this staggered stance. My right leg was always forward. So I didn't think anybody would shoot on my left leg. Sure enough, first match I wrestle, kid shoots in on my left leg, and I just go down like a ton of bricks, right? And I ended up coming back in that match, beating that kid. Tech fall the kid in the semifinals and made it into the state championships. And I could barely bend my knees. So I don't know if you know much about wrestling, but you have to get in the down position, and I couldn't bend my knees. So I like left my leg flared way out on the left. It was like an ankle picking nightmare for me. So I was like a ankle picking dream for my competitors. And so yeah, fought pretty hard in the state championships, but I lost 3-1 that match. Came back after the state championships, went back to the doctor and said, I was like, all right, I'm ready for surgery now. And he goes, well, wait a minute. Let's just talk about this. And I'm like, well, what is there to talk about? He's like, well, you took second at state with a torn ACL. And I said, yeah. He's like, well, you wanna roll the dice for track too? And I said, yeah, I do. Like, how do I do that? And he goes, well, we'll contrast bath it. And this was my first introduction to contrast bath. He said, contrast bath it every single day to get the swelling out of it and see if you can run. If you can't run, come back. We'll do the surgery. And if you can run, great. Run the season, run the entire track season. We'll do surgery after the season. This is your senior year. You might as well take advantage and do the best you can. I was like, great. So I would contrast bath it every single day, hot, cold, ice massage and heat back and forth. And Jeremy, I know you're big into that too. But got all the swelling out of it. And the only thing that would bother me is like my ACL would like float around in my knee. So like it pops off from one end, not both. Right. And it would like float around and catch every once in a while, which, it was gross. Like it just felt gross. My knee would lock up, but that, you know, I ended up running track and I ran faster than the state record in the 300 meter hurdles that year. And so when I went back for surgery in the summer, he's like, you beat the state record. He was just blown away. Right. And again, it goes back to all those years of dedicated discipline. I think, you know, working out has like this compound interest effect on your body. And I worked out so hard for so long. I was very, very strong at age 18 already. And he's like, I've never heard of this. He goes, like, if you played football or soccer, I would totally reconstruct your ACL. But I think we just go in. I think we clean up the scar tissue that's been created. I think we cut the ACL out and you just keep going. And because I was recruited to run college track, he's like, you know, if I do the full reconstruction, you know, your freshman year is basically out for sure. You know, you'll probably come back as a sophomore and run track, and which isn't the worst thing in the world, right? Most kids get, you know, cut or red shirt or gray shirt, something their freshman year anyway. But he's like, that we're guaranteeing that. He said, you know, let's just keep going with this. I'll clean it all up and get it out of there so it stops catching. You keep contrast bathing it every day. He said, you keep strengthening your quads and your hamstrings, and I think you're going to be okay. And Jeremy, that was 1999, and it is 2020, and I still do not have an ACL in my left leg.
Wow.
To this day. It hurt. It's I'm starting to feel it a little bit, you know, as I'm pushing 40. When I'm mountaineering and climbing a lot in the mountains, it swells up like a grapefruit, so I still have to really kind of take care of it. But yeah, it's still holding up.
So give me, we'll speed through your college track career. You ran collegiately. I think you said you were shooting to potentially go to the Olympics. Maybe you were, 10 out from that. Give me a split of what your track, career looked like.
Yeah. So this is where I was kind of going earlier is, you know, I knew what it took to win with high school wrestling. And I was just so fortunate to go right in from amazing wrestling team to an amazing track team. It almost sounds not even real, like to have 34 conference championships in a row. So my freshman year to my senior year of high school wrestling, we never lost a conference dual meet, never lost a conference championship. I go right into a college track program at UW-La Crosse where we never lost a national title my freshman year to senior year. We won the NCAA championships, indoor track and outdoor track, all 4 years. So had an eight-peat there, even a triple crown title, winning cross-country, indoor track, and outdoor track national championships. I won three national titles in the 400-meter hurdles, two national titles in the 4x400-meter relay. Very, very fortunate though. Again, like not only was I a part of a good program and a great coach, but my day-to-day training partner was a silver medalist in the world championships in the 400 meter dash. He ran, Andrew Rock ran a 44.26 second quarter mile. And so I got to train with him every day, you know, and we had this amazing recruiting class that every single year our coach would go out and say, hey, look, to all the kids out there, he's like, you can run with these guys. You know, like Jim Nelson was Gatorade Athlete of the Year. He went to La Crosse. Hans Schmidt was an 18-foot, 2-inch pole vaulter. He went to La Crosse. You know, Andrew Rock, second in the world in the 400-meter dash. He was at La Crosse. And it was like all these guys. And so the recruiting class got better and better and better every year. And I'm telling you, man, it was tough to make the team. There were some guys that would have placed in a collegiate conference championship that didn't even make our team.
Wow.
I believe at one point we had 2 4x400 meter relay teams that were separately ranked first and third in the entire country. And our first place team, regardless of division, NCAA D1, D2, D3, were ranked third. I believe LSU and Georgetown had a faster team than us.
And then you were recently inducted into the Hall of Fame of your college, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Our university inducted me into the Hall of Fame, and then I believe I was nominated for the NCAA Hall of Fame. So we'll see if that comes through.
Well, cool. So I know one of our tie-ins is kettlebells. You know, I got introduced to kettlebells in 2003 by Dragon Door. Pavel was there with Dragon Door in 03. And I know that's evolved over the last, you know, 15, 16 years. So when did kettlebells enter into your space?
Yeah, so after college and a couple of years of trying to run professional track unsuccessfully, I got into rock climbing. I had rock climbed in college a little bit. I took a one credit course as a junior and got into rock climbing. And so my brother and I, that was just something that we could do together. And we were at the gym one day and I was belaying him and I look up and I'm like, man, you got hamstrings. You know, I never noticed my brother had such big hamstrings. And he came down and I started looking at his shoulders and his arms. And I'm like, man, you look great. You got to be the biggest I've ever seen you. And he goes, actually, I weigh less than what I did when I wrestled in college. I'm like, that can't be, because you look huge, man. And he said, you know, I found these kettlebells. I'm doing this kettlebell thing. And that all stemmed from watching the movie The 300, that Spartan Warrior movie.
Yeah.
And he looked at where those guys trained to look like that. And they trained at Jim Jones and Mark Twight, who's a world-class alpinist. And he saw kettlebells and so started training with them. And he's like, I'm going to go see you get certified. When I get certified, I'll write you a program. And at the time, I was, like, selling exercise equipment. And, you know, I was a dad. I had two kids. I was busy. And I just didn't have a lot of time. And so I love the efficiency of kettlebells. It was just, like, strength in one workout, cardio in one workout, total body, just, like, you know, anywhere from 20 to 45 minutes, and I was done. And you know, to be honest, when you start working out when you're in second grade, and you work out and you're beyond college and you do get sick of the old leg extension, leg curl, bench press. You're like, man, I have been doing this forever. And then you jump on the elliptical machine, you know, do that. And you're like, I just can't do that. I had no passion for it at all. I probably gained about 15 pounds of not good weight. And within the first 3 months of kettlebell training, that just ripped right off me. And I felt amazing again. It was like I was working on technique and getting a workout at the same time. So yeah, that's where that all started.
Yeah. And then that takes you in. I know you're what, a 3 or 4 time champion tactical strength participant, right? Isn't that right?
Yeah. 14 actually. it's a weird thing. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. They run 2 a year. They run 2 per year, and actually a couple of those years I competed in multiple divisions, so it's kind of not fair. So I'm not sure how many years it was, but yeah, a lot of years of that.
Tell us about the tactical strength challenge and kind of how that works and what your numbers were when you were hitting at your peak and whatnot.
Yeah, so I just, being a rock climber and a runner, I really took to kettlebell snatching, and somebody brought to my attention the tactical strength challenge. You're like, well, hey, you're really good at snatching. You should do the TSC. I'm like, what's that? They said, well, it's a max weight deadlift. So it's powerlifting rule style deadlift. You get 3 attempts. And then there's a break, and then you do a strict pull-up test. And then there's a break, and then there's a 5-minute kettlebell snatching event. I'm like, oh, that sounds great. So the first year I did it, I did pretty well. You know, I want to say the first time I did it, maybe top 20. And then I broke into the top 5, like, in the fall. Cause so I did spring and fall that year and just really kept training for it. And like I said, ended up winning it in the open division and then the elite division multiple times. And then, just recently there was an opportunity where my brother and I could could take over kind of promotions for that and help oversee the Tactical Strength Challenge, which is a huge undertaking. And it's really changed my mindset. You know, it's in over 20 different countries now. And so you kind of have to look at it from a global perspective. You know, you can't call it the spring and fall TSC because Southern Hemisphere is opposite Northern Hemisphere. And, you know, and you have to, all sorts of weird stuff you never think of, like taking into consideration holidays and all these different countries and not putting it on the wrong day and things. So it's been really kind of fun to undertake, you know, taking it on and moving it forward.
Yeah. So you got the snatch, right? The pull up and the deadlift. And so I might probably say those in order. So can you like, so I'm an athlete. I'm going to take on that Tactical Strength Challenge. You said, how would it go for me? What would I do if I came to a challenge? Should I sign up onto a website and then I go to a host location and participate? What does that look
correct.
Like?
Correct. Yeah. Right now it's, you go to Strong First website. So that's just strongfirst.com and you can click on compete. And the Tactical Strength Challenge will pop up under that. And then you can sign up at a host facility. So there's host facilities all around the world. And then there's judges at these facilities. And so let's say my brother is in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He is a host in Milwaukee. And so people from all over Wisconsin will go to his host site and him and I will be judges and we'll take people through the challenge that have signed up online. And then we both enter the scores online, which is can only be seen by us. It's kind of dark to the rest of the world. Obviously, with different time zones going on, we don't want to see what other people are scoring, you know, like ahead of time. We don't want to, you know, you don't want to see what, you know, what the Europeans are doing and kind of have that advantage. Like, okay, I know if I can deadlift 506, I beat that guy who deadlifted 505 and his weird things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all dark, and then a few days after the TSC, once we solidify all the scores and we kind of go through the video submissions, then because all the competitive divisions have to be judged by the TSC judge and videoed to be sent into kind of like the board that oversees all of it, just to make sure the judges know what they're doing. Then we open up the scores to the world, and it's scored where, like, let's say you win the deadlift, you get 1 point. If you take 300th place in the deadlift, you get 300 points. And then the lowest score at the end wins the overall. So you can win the deadlift, you can win the pull-ups, you can win the snatches, you can win the overall. There's multiple divisions. So there's a novice division for men. There's a open division, or classic, we call it. And then the competitive division where like, you know, the big boys play. And then there's the masters division for over 50. You have to be over 50 for the masters division. And then for women, there's a couple novice divisions in there, just based off of like flexed arm hang versus pull-ups and different weights of the kettlebells. So the women have some more choices, but they have a couple divisions of the novice, actually a couple divisions of the open as well. They have their own competitive division and then their own master's division.
Nice. So in taking on that now, as I heard your story over the last, you know, different sport events and different things, I hear that you're really good at channeling your energy into what you're doing. Like, it seems like you got high focus. And what is the strategy for that for you? Like, do you think of it that way? Is it something that, how do you manage your mindset whenever you get focused on a goal?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My wife says I'm like, obsessive. So that's just kind of it. When I get focused on something, I have this inner drive to always do my best. Like I can't be half-hearted about it. Like I'm all or nothing, you know. I have to if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it well. And I think that was just instilled in me by my parents. at a young age, you know, and how or why, I guess I'm not really sure. And we could dive into all the, you know, the psychology behind that, but yeah, so if I'm going to do something, I want to do it well. And so I'm able to put distractions away. And for example, in training for the TSC, that's all I train for. If people say, hey, you want to do this workout today? I'm like, no. They're like, why? You don't want to come work out with me? I'm like, no. I got my training for the TSC is Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and that's all I do. And they're like, well, can't you go for a run on Saturday? And no, I can't. Like, because that would mess up my training, right? Like, I'm not gonna work on my pressing skills or my squatting skills when I need to deadlift, do pull-ups, and kettlebell snatch, right? So yeah, I get super focused. Like, I know what I want, and I don't want to waste my time doing anything else, right? And it was that way in track too, right? Like, I wanted to win a national title, and so, you know, I would count my steps on the way to school, because in my race, the 400 hurdles, you have to know your steps in between the hurdles. Like, if, you know, if you're 6 inches off by the time you get to the hurdle, or one step, or if you're 1 inch every step for 13 steps, you're 13 inches off, right? So, like, these little things make a big difference. And I learned that early on, like, if I can be a master of these small things, you know, they're going to add up over time, and it's going to really make a difference for me. And so I just memorized my stride pattern, and I would be like walking to class, holding my books, and I'd be counting my stride pattern, 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, 11, 13, 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, 11, 13, you know, and I'd count my stride pattern. People would be like, hey, what's up, Derek? And I'd kind of like give them a hand and keep going, because I'm doing this mental imagery of my race and counting my steps. So yeah, I don't know. I was just super like hyper-focused, and I don't know. I hope that doesn't mean I didn't have a life, but, yeah, I really get into things when I want to be successful.
So kind of transitioning even another step to your mountaineering and your, you know, I know you're big into the rock climbing, and you've been moving to that, and have your new program, that you're offering. Tell us about like what that looks like, and helping people train for life, using different maybe outcomes or goals to accomplish something as a, you know, method to pull them forward. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So, after winning multiple TSCs, you know, I felt like I had conquered a lot of things, right? You know, wrestling was over. I didn't win my state championship, but I took second, and there's no going back. So that was it. You know, track, it's kind of the same thing. I took it as far as I could, into the Olympic trials and the USA World Team trials and that. And then, you know, got going in the TSC, and obviously found success with that. And, I don't want to say I got like tired of winning, but I really enjoy competition, and I really enjoy people pushing me or having some kind of outside motivation pushing me. And, you know, I had a little bit of extra time on my hands, from being successful in business. And so I remembered this rock climbing that I had done for a long time. I'm like, you know what? I think I want to pick this up more, because there's always another mountain that can smack you in the face. Like, Mother Nature says, I'm going to crush you. You know, I'm better than you. And it's just this challenge. Always, there's always something harder to climb, harder to do, or even a climb at the same degree of difficulty that's just different and not my style. And so, yeah, I got away from the deadlifting like 600 plus pounds and got some flexibility back and some mobility and some conditioning for ultra endurance stuff. And I just found I really love it. And it feels like a life sport to me, because I'm out there, and just this weekend I saw an icon of climbing in the United States, Pete Cleveland. So if anybody's a climber out there, I encourage you to look up Pete Cleveland. He climbed a climb in the Needles in South Dakota that 50 years later, no one has ever repeated, because it's somewhat insane to do, right? And so Yeah, I ran into him this weekend climbing, just, and he's 78 years old, still showing up the young bucks, you know? And so I'm like, man, this is such a cool, I love being outside. I love the challenge. And it dawned on me, all of a sudden it dawned on me that my whole life I have trained for something, right? Like in the beginning, I trained because I didn't want to get picked on anymore. I hated getting picked on. I felt like I needed to be like, kind of show my value to the world. And I loved wrestling and I wanted to be a champion. And then that took into track. I was training for track. And then that went into the TSC. And then that went into my own mountaineering and climbing. And, you know, today I'm pushing 40 and I have like a range anywhere from 5 to 8% body fat. And I stay at the top of my game all the time. And I really believe it's because I've always had something to train for. I've always had something to focus on. And I'm like, this is what people need, you know. People, I've seen people go to the gym and they'll get in great shape for a time and then often they revert back or they detrain or the, you know, the progression stops, right? And they start to move backwards a little bit. Like, why did they start moving backwards? Like, didn't they enjoy their new body and their new physicality and capabilities? And the answer is no. You know, they have this desk job and they eat McDonald's and Pizza Hut and they get big and they're like, they look in the mirror one day and they don't like the person they see. And so they join the local functional fitness gym and that's their new adventure, right? That's what they're focused on. And so they love to work out to get better at working out, right? That's like, that's their hobby and that's totally cool. But after a while they get to this level of shape that they're like, yeah, I'm in great shape. And then they don't set a new goal. They don't set this new thing to go after. And so they kind of start to detrain because let's face it, you don't have to have a 400-pound clean and jerk to go to your office job and sit behind the computer, right? And so like their lifestyles don't warrant being in the best shape of their life. And so I'm like, this is what people need. People need a goal. Like if their lifestyles force them to be in the best shape of their life, they would be in the best shape of your life. So like, for example, one of my goals this summer, I'm doing 2 laps of Grand Teton. So from the parking lot to the top is 11 miles, 11 miles up, 11 miles down. It's about 7,000 feet of elevation gain. And they say every 1,000 feet feels like about another 2 miles. So 7,000 up, 7,000 down. That's like, feels like another 14 miles. So it's 22 miles plus an additional feeling like 14 is like, you know, 36 miles. I'm doing 2 laps in 5 days. I'm telling you, if I'm not in the best shape of my life, that will be one, I'll either not be able to do it, which I won't allow for. Like I won't allow my own physicality to hold me back from doing something I want to achieve. Or number two, I won't enjoy it, right? Like I might be able to do it, but it's going to be terrible. Like, and I don't want that. It's supposed to be this epic experience. I don't want to be just miserable, grueling drudgery the whole time, right? So I need to be in great shape. And that, you know, like yesterday I snatched a kettlebell for an hour. People look at me and they're like, how can you just snatch a kettlebell for an hour? Isn't that boring? I'm like, no, you know why? Because I think my brain goes to the mountains and I think of what Grand Teton is going to be like and how awesome it is and amazing in that experience and what kind of shape I have to be in. And it just drives me to like when snatching starts to not feel awesome, like just keep getting after it. I'm like, Derek, you're going to have that 65-pound backpack on and you're going to be hiking for 5 hours, you know, and guess what? The 6 hour is going to feel miserable, but you have to keep going. You can't stop snatching, right? So that's just kind of where my mindset goes. And so I have a passion for getting that out to other people. And so I have this company called TNT Adventure Fit. And I challenge people to step up and choose an adventure that's out of their comfort zone that they have to train for. And then I help them train for that.
So, I mean, it sounds awesome in a sense, but my question is, you snatch for an hour. Did you literally snatch for an hour or did you do interval sets every X amount of minutes? What did that workout look like?
That's part of the secret sauce there, Jeremy.
Trying to get the goods.
You twist my arm. So yeah, no, I built up where I would do like 5 reps every 30 seconds for an hour. And I built that into then snatch walking, where I would snatch and take one step and then snatch and take one step. And I would snatch for an hour like that without setting the kettlebell down. And now I'm on a progression where I do 5 repetitions every 20 seconds. So I have to do 15 snatches a minute for an hour. In my next progression, right before the Tetons, I'll be doing 5 snatches every 15 seconds for an hour. So 20 snatches per minute for an hour. And that's my last progression before I get out there. So, yeah. That's 20 great. Times 6, that's 1,200 snatches in an hour with a 24-kilogram kettlebell.
That's awesome, man. Well, yeah. I have one more question for you. Do you have a year that you plan to live for? Tell. Do you have a date? Do you have how many years you'll be on this planet?
Oh, that's an interesting question. That's kind of fun. So how do I answer this? Yeah, I would love to be an old man. Like, I picture myself as a grandpa, 90 plus years old, like living life. Like I said, I'm inspired by Pete Cleveland, who's 78 years old and still climbing. Like, those guys are definitely inspiring to me. And I do have some longevity in my family, so I believe I can do it and stay healthy. I do talk to people who've lived a long time, or children of people who lived a long time, like, hey, tell me about your dad, or tell me about your grandpa. Like, what did he do? Like, what was his lifestyle like? Because there, and honestly, I've found some crazy things over the board, across the board. One of the major components to longevity I've found is apples, believe it or not. It sounds kind of weird. I don't know why, like, a lot of them eat apples. I don't know. But some had stressful jobs, not stressful jobs. Some chewed tobacco and just all this stuff. I think one of the number one things people had was like a drive or a willing, a desire to keep moving out forward, something to live for. So while I say, like, I would love to be in my 90s, or Lord willing, 100, oh my gosh, that'd be incredible. Like, I'd be dancing, right? At the same time, I feel like I've had friends die, you know, in their younger years of life, 20s and 30s. And whenever I see that, actually, someone just died yesterday, believe it or not, in my wife's class. He was 37 or 38 years old. Like, I know I can be taken at any time, right? I could get off this podcast and jump on the highway and be killed. And so that's part of what drives me too, though, Jeremy, you know, like I feel like I have to achieve things before I'm gone, you know, like that's part of my drive. Like, why I want to go do things. I have like this now mentality. I can't wait. I can't achieve this dream 20 years from now, right? Because what if I'm not here? Or what if I don't have the capacity to get it 20 years from now? If I have the capacity and capabilities to do it now, I better do it now. And if I do it now, then what's the next goal, right? Like, if I wait 20 years to achieve this, maybe I'll achieve it. But what have I missed in the last 20 years, you know? So that's a deep question.
Good, man.
I don't know if I answered it.
No, it was good. It's something for you to ponder too as you go forward. But hey, I'm going to do a tactical strength challenge, number one. And maybe at some point I'll be a host and commit to that. But I appreciate you coming on the podcast. I know it was a short notice and all that good stuff. So thanks for jumping on. And man, we'll be talking to you soon.
Sounds good. Good luck, Jeremy. Looking forward to listening to your podcast in the future.
Right on. Thanks.